Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 287 of The Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. How are you, Sarah?
I'm good, Megan. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm really excited for our topic today because not only are we talking about holiday shopping and just shopping in general, but during the holiday season, but we're talking about mindful shopping, which I think is something that we have touched on a lot, but never really dug fully into, especially in the era we are living in now, where things have gotten a little different.
Yeah. And things have changed. I mean, the way I think about shopping intentionally or shopping mindfully, I think it's evolved over like the last 10 years, but I think it's been something I've thought a lot about in the last year.
Yeah. Agreed. Also, I think that there are other factors at play this year. So we're all kind of going to be shopping, I'm going to guess, more from home. Our budgets may look very different from the way they looked last year. And combined with those two things, there's an even bigger need than ever for us to support local and small businesses, whether in our area or not. But like the ways we would have once done that maybe are changing or not as accessible. So like there's just a lot of factors that are different this year. And this is definitely the time when that's on my mind, because I think most of us do more shopping in the next 6 weeks than we do all year round in some cases.
I think you're right. I think everything that we've relied upon on the past, just like so many things with COVID, this is perhaps an opportunity to try something new, or to look at this almost as a clean slate. I know we're going to get into this, but it's easy to feel overwhelmed when you want to, you know, quote unquote, shop well, or use your dollars toward good. But that can be really overwhelming, and we're going to dig into that. But I think if you've never thought about it that way, or you've been intimidated to start, why not this year? Because everything's going to be different anyway, I guess, is my point.
Exactly. And I love that the working title, at least right now, is a judgment-free conversation about shopping more mindfully. And I love that because, you know, there's calculus to all this. So none of us have an unlimited budget. Let's just start with that. So if you buy local or small in one category, or for one person or one gift or whatever, or one event, it's very possible that you won't have the budget left to do the same in another category or area. And that's just the economic reality that we live in right now. We are really, like, our economy is built around big box stores and mass production being a big part of what drives it. So it's really difficult for the average person to actually be able to thwart that for every purchase or every category of purchases. So we recognize that everyone's working with the funds that they have, the availability that they have, which in your area might not be a lot, or, you know, there might be other reasons you just don't have access to some of that. And I just want to emphasize that, like, anytime you support a local business or a small business or an indie business, it does make a difference. So it doesn't have to be every time. Like, anytime is good. It doesn't have to be every time. And also that we know there's a trade-off. And this is just kind of ironic to me, but just this morning before we started recording this episode, I had decided I wanted to replace Will's bed and mattress because he's so tall that his legs, like his feet hang off the end of his bed. So I really wanted it, and I wanted it at this right price, and I ended up ordering it online for lots of reasons. One of them being I just don't have the wherewithal right now to go shop in a, you know, mattress store and then have something delivered in 2 or 3 weeks. And also, I didn't want to pay those prices. And I thought, well, gosh, if I spend $1,000 on a mattress, which is kind of about average when you're in like a store like that, then that's like, you know, $800 less than I have that I have to spend mindfully at Christmas, which is coming up. So it was kind of like I had to do this trade-off. And so it was a little weird for me to be thinking about shopping locally and then not go to a local store to buy this big purchase. But it was kind of like this one big purchase or lots of little ones in the future. And I know we're going to dig into how that calculus looks different for all of us. But it was just kind of a funny example of me having to, in that moment, make a choice that felt right for future choices.
Yes, I totally know what you mean. And I think I love that we're calling this a judgment-free conversation or a no-judgment conversation, because first of all, that's what we try to do here in every episode. But anytime we're talking about things like this, and I would include like making environmental decisions for your home products or even what you feed your family, there's like sometimes I think we get afraid of shame or judgment if we're not doing it right, or if we're not doing it all the way. And actually that can prevent having conversations about just doing incrementally better. So I love what you're saying about it doesn't have to be the holiday where everything is handmade, indie bought, women-owned business, locally sourced.
Right.
But if we can make incremental choices, or if we can normalize the thought process that goes into our purchasing, I think that could be a really helpful conversation for moms. Because I know for me, it has been overwhelming. So
yeah.
Well, in terms of today's episode, we're going to have fun. The first half of the episode is kind of just going to be more of this general conversation about how we think about our shopping choices, how they've evolved, and maybe what we want to continue to do a little more or better this holiday season. And then later on in the show, I'm just excited to show you some purchases I've made in the last year or so, Megan, that I consider to be small business, handmade,
indie
businesses. And then you can just kind of ask me questions. And it's not a gift guide per se, because I don't expect others to go out and buy these exact products. But I think, at least for me, it's really helpful to see examples of what other people are purchasing when they're trying to turn towards smaller businesses or locally owned businesses, et cetera. So we'll play a little case study with some of my purchases from the last year. So this will be fun. But before that, we thought it would be extra fun to look at how our personalities kind of influence the way we shop. So those of you who've listened for a long time know that we both enjoy a little Enneagram discussion now and then. If you're not familiar with the Enneagram, I'll link up past episodes where we've talked about it. But Megan, I'm just curious how your Enneagram number kind of reveals itself in how you shop. And obviously you'll want to tell everybody what your number is.
Sure. Well, I also want to point out that I thought it was interesting that we both appear to be overthinkers when it comes to gifts, even though we have different Enneagram numbers, which I think is funny. And also earlier when I was talking about that calculus, I think that the calculus your brain does to help you arrive at the way that you shop could be different based on your personality. So we're not all even working with the same like arithmetic, right? We're like, we all have a different form of how we're coming to these decisions. So I am a 2, and the Enneagram is essentially like a personality test. So it's based on 9 numbers, and I'm a 2. And 2s are givers and nurturers. And honestly, probably in my life, nowhere else does this present for me as much as it does like over the holidays in general, not just gift giving, but like, you know, everything about holidays, about how I create a holiday experience for other people and all of that. My two-ness comes out in like full force during this time of year. But I think a lot about the impact my shopping has. And the funny thing is, I think about it equally, the people that I'm shopping for and the people I'm shopping from, that I'm buying from. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those two things can be a little bit in conflict. So that's interesting. But when it comes to the people that I'm buying from, like I think about the people who own the businesses I'm buying from. I think about the people who own the businesses I'm not buying from. It's harder if they're people I know personally or who live in my community. And by harder, I just mean, I feel more, not obligated is the wrong word. I feel more driven to think of them and try to figure out ways to support those businesses. And then sometimes I even get caught up in like this comparative positive impact. Of like, if I bought from this person, this business versus that one, like I could buy from someone locally whom I know, or I could buy from a small business where I don't know anybody, but I think they're a great business. Or I could buy from a fair trade company that specifically is supporting like women in developing nations. Or sometimes I'll be like, well, don't the people that work in that big factory in China, like they need money too. So I can really like my tunis can really start to spin on this stuff. And it can be really hard to like kind of zero in on where do I feel my dollar will both be best used or most needed and get me the thing I need or want for this other person. Which is where I lead to the other obsession, which is like really thinking about the value of a gift in someone's life. I really want gifts to be meaningful. I want them to be personal. I really dislike rote giving. I hate obligatory gift giving. I don't do that. So I will spend like so much time looking for the exact perfect gift for one person that I want to show a little extra love to. Or sometimes I just get inspired and think they would love this thing. And then I go on this like mad, you know, journey to find it. And then I use up all my time and energy and I don't have any time to put into balancing things out for the other people. So I'm actually really grateful that my siblings and friends and I, we really don't do like rote gift giving. There's no expectation. Sometimes I'll give someone like an amazing gift and then nothing for 3 or 4 years. So not having that expectation of each other, I feel like allows me to shop the way I like to shop, which may not be the same for all of them, unfortunately, because I get right. the feeling sometimes there are people who would really rather just make the same list every year and check it off equally. And that's just like, so that's just so not me. But I might see like this amazing thing at a fair trade shop or on Etsy, or just have this idea for a great gift and do it. And then I don't feel like I have to repeat it every year. Or like, now that I've done this amazing thing for my brother, I have to put in the same amount of time for my other brother and my sister. You know, like, I'll get around to them eventually.
Yeah.
You know, on top of that, I think a lot about creating a nurturing experience over the holiday, which doesn't necessarily mean gifts, but like food and music. And often those things are tied into buying opportunities that you can overthink, right? So like, let's pretend mm-hmm. I'm making a treat for my boyfriend. He eats keto and mostly organic. So then am I obligated to use organic ingredients and avoid sugar, even if that's not the way I would have baked if it wasn't for that? Or like, mm-hmm. if I'm making a cookie plate, should I work to find out whether my friend likes chocolate or sugar cookies before I decide what I'm going to make? So sometimes just worrying about that kind of stuff can take some of the spontaneous joy out of making mm-hmm. it, and also leads to like other purchasing decisions I may not have made. So it's very complex for me. My two-ness is in overdrive right now. What about you?
Okay, so that was all fascinating. And I agree, there are some similar things in how my oneness presents. But one big difference is twos are known for setting aside their own needs, sometimes to the point of it building up and then becoming either resentful or grumpy later. And ones, I don't think, do that as much. So where there might feel like there are some similarities, when I was hearing you talk, I was like that little red flag of like, oh, but where's Megan's enjoyment in the shopping here? Or like, right. what's the easiest thing for Megan right. to do? And whereas I don't have as much trouble prioritizing that, but I have other hangups, and let's dig in.
I cannot wait. Yay.
Okay. Yeah. There is a lot of oneness in my shopping. First and foremost, ones like our systems and our strategies and our procedures, and we can sometimes resist change. So if we are going to make a change, like say starting to shop more locally or from more small businesses, or COVID's changed the way that we usually shop, we can sometimes get real focused on doing it the right way or the best way, which, you know, anybody who has that kind of mind knows it can lead to a lot of hand-wringing or decision paralysis and just kind of unnecessary overthinking. But part of that is because we like to do things like the right way or the best way or the most efficient way or the most productive way or the most cost-saving way. But whatever it is we want the right answer. And so that's why we don't change for a long time. And then when we do, it can be difficult. Ones can also be more black and white thinkers, which for me can really lead to kind of all or nothing thinking. And I know we touched on this earlier, but I don't think shopping small and local and shopping, you know, ethically sourced, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be like you do it all the one best way or not at all. But I'm easily drawn into that type of thinking. So I have to kind of challenge that for myself. Otherwise, it will lead to me doing nothing and making no little incremental changes, which is not right either. Ones really like equity and fairness. And I admit to sometimes getting stuck not knowing like which lane to pick, like which is the almost like the moral highest ground of my purchasing power, which is like just, again, way too much overthinking. But when you were talking about your two-ness and wanting to take care of all the potential groups, right, like down to the factory workers in China, right. as well as the small business, yours yeah. is coming out in this nurturing caretaker sense. And mine's coming out as in like, I want to know which is the most effective sort of use of my shopping yeah. dollars, or who needs it the most? Like what's the fairest representation of wanting to shop smaller, shop local? So I think that was interesting, is that our behavior may be the same, but it maybe comes from a different place. And then a big one for ones is we often spend a lot of time trying to avoid criticism or being very critical of ourselves, sometimes of others. And what I have found is I also have a thing of, I never want to be perceived as hypocritical or like I'm holier than thou or that I might be judging other people. So for example, if I, you know, get on this podcast or get on Instagram and talk about shopping small, supporting my local businesses in my town, and then I make mention of a Target run or a Starbucks run, I can spend a lot of mental energy feeling like it somehow doesn't count, or that I've been hypocritical, mm-hmm. or that others will see me as like talking out of both sides of my mouth. And I don't know if that's a one thing or a Sarah thing. But it's definitely in the past held me back from just sharing authentically, like, oh, I found this really, you know, I'm into fair trade coffee right now and talking about that. And then thinking, yeah, but what if my other purchases aren't fair trade? Or there's probably some other category that I'm totally a hypocrite about this. And so, yeah, we can run around in circles trying to make sure that we're morally correct, or that we're somehow free from that kind of criticism. So, poof.
Well, it's a lot. And I think that also if we've experienced a lot of kind of what comes off as sort of holier than thou enthusiasm about these issues from other people, it's easy to wonder if we're putting that out too, even if we're literally just talking about something we like, oh my gosh, I felt so good that I shopped at the store and supported this business that I appreciate, and I got this great purse or whatever, right?
Right.
That's not the same thing as saying like, everybody should do that, because how could you dare buy a mass produced object and da da da. But sometimes it's easy to mentally get those two things tangled up.
Yes.
And to think maybe you sound like you're doing the second one when you really just want to do the first one. So
exactly.
I think that's
exactly.
pretty common, but your oneness definitely makes it come out in a different way.
Yeah. Anyway, so interesting. Again, for those who are huge Enneagram fans, we'll link up some of our past personality discussions in the show notes, but thought it would be a fun way to start today. So let's take a break, and then we'll get into some more specifics about how we are shopping this holiday season in our local communities and online.
Sarah, we're talking about our shopping habits in today's episode, and I love that with our sponsor Canvas People and the deal they're offering, our listeners could probably take care of several people on their gift list with just a few clicks. Shopping may look a little different this year, but it doesn't have to be stressful, and creating a beautiful piece of art with Canvas People is not only easy, it's actually fun. And that's coming from me, who you know is the much less techie one of the two of us.
Yes, that is true. And Megan, I've seen the canvas prints that you've made with Canvas People, and they're beautiful. Canvas People prints your favorite photo memories on canvas, turning them into unique works of art that look great hanging in your home. And wait till you hear the deal we've got going with them this holiday season. It's a 16x20 canvas for free.
These canvas prints really fit with any decorating style, so if you're not sure what to get for someone on your list, they're a great option. I've also been able to work mine into my home decor in such a way that I don't have to hang them, and they look really cool. The canvas is wrapped around a sturdy frame, so the whole thing can kind of artfully lean against a mantle or a shelf.
Yes, I love that look, and I also employ that in my own decorating. Also, if you are not sitting on a huge stash of professionally edited digital photos, Canvas People has photo editors available who can improve your image by hand. Little things like whitening teeth or removing imperfections.
And now, as a special, very limited holiday offer, canvaspeople.com is offering their popular 16x20 photo canvases for free. That's right, free. These normally sell for $113.99, but you'll pay nothing, just cover shipping and handling. To get your free 16x20 canvas, text MOMHOUR to 64000. You're just going to pay shipping and handling. This offer won't last, so text MOMHOUR to 64000. That's MOMHOUR to 64000. Sarah, you know I've been trying to eat a lot less sugar and carbs lately, and honestly, for meals, that's pretty easy for me, but snacking can be really hard. Sometimes I just want to grab something that's already like done and go, you know?
Oh yeah, you're right. And it can be really hard to find ready-made snacks that aren't full of sugar, which is why we're both so crazy about our sponsor, Monk Pack. That's Monk as in chipmunk. And these snacks are seriously delicious and healthy. Monk Pack's nut and seed bars contain less than 1 gram of sugar, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and they're only 150 calories.
They taste so good too. They are that perfect blend of sweet and salty, and they don't have that fakey like sugar flavor many so-called healthy bars do. The peanut butter dark chocolate was not surprisingly my favorite. And Sarah, I have a feeling you were crazy about the sea salt dark chocolate, huh?
I mean, you have me at sea salt. You know my snack habits, Megan. So you also know I'm not keto, and Monk Pack is a keto-friendly brand. But the good news is you don't have to be keto to enjoy them. They're just plain delicious and good for you. Gluten-free, plant-based, and non-GMO with no soy, trans fat, sugar alcohols, or artificial colors.
Try Monk Pack bars for yourself and you'll see what we're talking about. And we have a special deal for you. Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering our code MOM at checkout. Again, to get started, just go to monkpack.com. That's M-U-N-K-P-A-C-K.com and select any product, then enter the code MOM at checkout to save 20% off your purchase.
So let's make sure we all kind of know what we're talking about here. And I just made a big list of terms in our show outline because I think it illustrates how overwhelming this can get if we want to be shopping more mindfully. We've got obviously small businesses. We've got women-owned businesses and Black-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses. We've got local businesses, and each of us obviously is in a different locality. Then there's things like handmade and craftsman and artisan, you know, artisan. Then there's things like ethically made, ethically sourced, and fair trade. I haven't even gotten into the thing where businesses donate a portion of their profits back into a cause. Or sometimes there's the thing where like larger corporations are supportive of something that you think is really important. You know, I'm thinking when Target came out in support of breastfeeding moms and said, moms who can breastfeed anywhere in our store. And we were all like, yay, Target,
yay,
you know?
Yes.
And so sometimes even the big box stores sort of catch our attention in a way that we either do or maybe do not wish to support them. So that's a lot. And I probably even missed some on the list.
I'm sure you did. It's really overwhelming. And I think the last two things you talked about were the donations of profits or a portion of profits and the vocal support. I believe those are both just referred to as cause marketing, although I could be wrong about that.
Okay.
But even cause marketing can get really tricky because then you'll have a whole nother contingent that will come out and say like, oh, like we don't know where the money's actually going. And this is just like greenwashing or this is just this or that, you know? So it's like, everyone's got so many opinions about this stuff. And the way I kind of feel about those, and I know we're going to get into more of these, more of like the how we personally shop. But with those, it's kind of like, if I was going to be shopping at Target anyway, I'm going to feel good about the fact that I'm shopping at Target right now while they're in support of breastfeeding moms. But it probably wouldn't have made me drive across town to go to a Target if I didn't already like and appreciate mm-hmm. the experience of shopping at Target. And maybe that's an important thing to come back to. Like all of the shopping in every single one of these categories should feel good to you and not like a huge departure from what you otherwise want to do, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Like that's like a good starting ground, right?
Yeah.
Like where do you want to shop? Where do you think the products are quality and something you want to use or give away? Like are the prices, they don't have to be Amazon prices because we know that that's unrealistic and no local company can match that, but are they fair? Like, are they within your budget? Like there's so many places to start. And I think you can start kind of selfishly. And just say, yes. Am I spending this just because they're saying they're going to give 15% to this cause? Or do I want to spend this money on this thing?
I totally agree. And I think a lot of this is just an awareness, bringing an awareness to the different options we have. And I think in this COVID winter we're going into, the awareness is right in front of us. There are businesses closing in my town all over the place, like windows like shuttered, the boutiques that are not there anymore. So bringing that awareness and understanding that no one purchase is going to save that business or is going to, you know, keep a big box chain that you don't care about as much afloat. But each of these micro decisions kind of reflects, you know, just bringing that awareness to light as a purchaser. And this is also a good time to say, when my kids were really tiny, I didn't have the headspace for this. I have more I have more headspace right now to think about this. So if you're in a time of life where subscribe and save Amazon is getting you through and that's going to be how the holidays happen, this is a no shame, no judgment conversation. But I think what we want to do is play around with these ideas of, like you said, Megan, how can I fit this into my natural purchasing, especially this year when businesses and families are hurting? So,
yeah.
With that, maybe do we want to share some ways, since it is so overwhelming to do it all, what are the things that speak to you personally or that maybe feels like a good place for you to start?
Well, it's worth noting that there are maybe, just because of the place I live, small town, basically retail desert, there really are only maybe 2 to 3 retail shops or restaurant chains, like total 2 to 3 that I ever visit around here. There just aren't that many. So almost any time that I shop or eat locally, like as in within a 5 to 10 minute drive of my house, that automatically means I'm shopping small. I don't have to make that delineation. So like it's actually harder for me to shop local to my home and not shop small than mm-hmm. it would be, if that makes sense. It's easier for me to get online and shop big if that's the way I was going to do it. But it does simplify things a bit. So because I've lived here for 12 years now, I've sort of naturally been gravitating toward this sort of mix of small and local and ethical, the way I consider ethical, that just kind of works its way into my natural shopping rhythm. So I do a mix of local to support the small business community in my area of the people that I actually know, and then ethical and fair trade, which actually can be local as well, because we have a couple of fair trade shops. And they mostly have stuff like jewelry and accessories and leather goods and soaps and personal care and maybe like a really small selection of clothing. But it is nice to know that like I can easily put a portion of my dollar, like my budget, toward that. I do get overwhelmed buying a lot of handmade and maker stuff online. And so this feels like it feels like going local to these like two or three shops is just an easier way for me to kind of cover a couple different categories at once rather than trying to spread it out too much. But I know you're better at that, Sarah, and are going to talk about that maker stuff and how you've been able to do that on Etsy. And I'm looking forward to learning from that because it does feel like something that's hard. I just don't know where to get started most of the time.
Now, how are your boutiques going to be this winter, do you think? Will you be able to like call ahead or just pop in with a mask? Like, how is that going to work?
So last year, it's kind of hard to say how things will be this year. Last year, everybody basically shut down. And I will say all the stores stayed open for curbside and delivery, but there was a huge range of how well people implemented it. And some just didn't. I mean, like some places basically was like, we can't do it. Like, if you call us and tell us what book you want, we'll look it up in our system. We'll buy it. And in 2 weeks, you can come pick it up on our curb. Like that, it just wasn't, you would have to think really, really hard to shop that way. And I'm hoping that, you know, the 3 to 6 months kind of downtime that they had, depending on when they closed and opened back up, maybe gave them some time to think about how they would handle this holiday season. I really hope that they weren't too optimistic that COVID would just be gone, like you and I and some other people might have been back then. Yeah. And had a plan, because ideally they would all now have fairly robust e-commerce or some really simplified way to call and or get in touch with them online and order and then just go pick it up. Shopping did start happening here again. I want to say like shops were open for the first week or two after restaurants closed, and then shops closed, and then everything was closed to in-person shopping for at least, 2 months. It was a long time. So it would be really bad if that happened again now. So I hope it doesn't. But if I could get in a habit where I can just order online or call and pick something up, I mean, that's my preference. If it works that way, some stuff doesn't really lend itself to shopping like that.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen? Because like something like smelling up soap or like looking at a pair of earrings, it's really hard to do that in kind of a generalized e-commerce way unless they have a really good system set up.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that shops can stay open too. I was curious because also your weather is so different from ours that I just didn't know how much people would be going out to shops, but I hope it works.
Yeah, well, and the weather won't make it really different because we're used to that. I think it'll be more like how COVID-y is it around here, you know?
Yeah.
How many people in your home are quarantined? Because right now that's becoming a thing. Like, like I know personally of 3 households where someone in the house is quarantined. So that's yeah.
Well, so for me, I do love browsing Etsy and Minted and probably some other kind of online marketplaces. Those are the main two that I do for kind of artsy stuff, maker stuff. And we'll talk about some specific purchases later in the show. But it's so funny when you were talking about how you can't step out your door without shopping local because that's really all there is. The area I moved from in Orange County was the exact inverse of that, which is I couldn't step out my door without big box and chain, both in terms of retail, like clothing and home goods, and also restaurants. It was actually very hard in the part of Orange County where I lived to find indie shops and boutiques and mom and pop restaurants. It just was barely there at all. Santa Barbara is different. It's a nice mix here. We have some chains, especially in clothing and that kind of retail. We have a lot of mall stores, but we have tons of restaurants that are independently owned and coffee shops that are independently owned, and then also gifty boutiques and stuff like that. So it does feel very different here, and I am motivated to support local, but I do feel like I kind of had this groove of shopping online for smaller maker made stuff already because I was in the opposite kind of place that you were before this. So,
yeah.
Well, what are some things that you already do in your real life? And you've mentioned some that you can for sure continue through this holiday season. And I can go first on this. So we are already doing a local CSA box for our produce. It's weekly now. I was doing every other week. Now it's weekly. And I'm really going to try to make that my primary produce for this winter. And then everything at the grocery store, or the Trader Joe's, almost be just to supplement for a recipe or things like that. In the past, it was almost the reverse. Like my regular produce shopping happened at the grocery store. And then the CSA was like, oh, fun. We got this. But I really, now that we're in the groove with it, I kind of want to prioritize using that CSA box for our main produce and just buy bananas and some things that they don't, you know, they don't ever send because they're not seasonal and local. I have been really good or really committed to shopping local bookstores. So we have a great local bookstore called Chaucer's that I order online and I pick it up or I call them. And so that's the only place I've bought books since we moved here. But also bookshop.org is, if you're not familiar, it is a marketplace of indie bookstores. So you are placing an online order and your order supports indie bookstores everywhere, kind of. So if you don't have a great indie bookstore that you have a personal relationship with, I think that's a great alternative and just an easy switch because it's still online ordering. You'll still find every book that you'd want, but you know that those dollars are going to indie bookstores. So that's a good one. And I was doing that before we moved. And then another thing I've tried to do lately is if I receive a gift or come across a cool company that someone else has purchased, I just try to make a mental note to look that up the next time I'm purchasing a gift. So we got a little candy basket from a company called Candy Wish. And it was really cute. We got to go online and pick our candy selections. And then they were shipped in this cute box. And anytime that something feels a little unique or special, I just try to remember that for when I need to purchase a gift next time. So
I like that. I was thinking about how many of the things that I'm already doing could be modified for COVID time, like for COVID ramp up times, right? So over the summer, Claire and I started going on a weekly, like when they opened the library back up, we started going on a weekly date where we would go to the library. After that, we'd go get like cocoa or something. And then there's this little store next to the bookstore. So sometimes we'd pop in. If we didn't find exactly what we wanted at the library, sometimes we'd pop into the bookstore and get a book. But we didn't do that every time. That gets very expensive. But there's this little store next to it that has like little baskets full of just little trinkets and stuff. And so the first time Clara and I went and got, you know, we each got our books. We got our cocoa. Actually, she got ice cream. I got cocoa. We got, I think we each got a book. And then she got like a little glass animal, like those little tiny figurines they've had forever.
Yeah.
You know, like their collectibles. And she said, well, this was just the best day of my life. And I realized how for kids right now, like they really need experiences that aren't the same, you know, same that they've had for the like just looking at us or if they're not going to school or whatever. So we've kept that up. And I was thinking, okay, so how could I do that if the library shuts down again, if I don't feel comfortable going in stores or if they're not open? So we could go, like we could sit down together, put a hold on books at the library. Because they even when the library was closed, it was still possible to pick up books on hold. I don't know how you did it, but they did have that possibility. Yeah. We could get Coco to go. Mm-hmm. We could take it home. Like maybe there's some other way for us to put together sort of that same date. And it'll just take a lot more work, but that, you know, that's COVID for you, right? Mm-hmm. So one thing that did happen since meat prices started to go up, like there was a big shift in meat prices, maybe in like April or May. And I started going to a local grass fed, locally grown meat market, nearby. So it's not their farms, but they source from local farms and their prices actually then became competitive. So before that those prices were higher. But because they didn't have the supply chain issues that other places had where ground beef suddenly went through the roof, I could go there. And then I found it kind of evened out. Like some of the stuff was more expensive. Some was a lot less expensive and it evened out. And I really liked supporting them. So however we have to continue that, we will. It might be, again, putting an order in ahead of time. Now that I've been there enough, I know what they have and I could pretty easily do that. There's a local outdoorsy store called Wanderlust that I love and I know the owners and I like that they do a really good job. And you don't have to be shopping for like camping gear. They have casual clothes. They have gloves and hats, you know, rain jackets and parkas, and they'll help you over the phone. So when things first closed down, I really needed a rain jacket and nothing was open, but I knew they were posting on Facebook that they were still in their store fulfilling their online purchases. And so I called and said, I need a rain jacket and I want it to fit like this. And I want it to, you know, be this material and da da da. And they talked me through the whole purchase. And then we just did it over the phone. And then they came out and put it in my back seat. So it was like that, you know, so many businesses are willing to go the extra mile.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can also go the extra mile by calling them and talking through a purchase instead of just clicking around online.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't do a good job of this year that I want to do better is to, like, as we kind of retreat more and more indoors, I want to identify two or three restaurants that I want to reward for how they've handled COVID. Like, some has done such a good job and I really want them to stay open, but I've gotten kind of lazy and random about the way I eat out. And mostly right now, if I do eat out, I stay close to home and I avoid crowds. That's all. Those are my two criteria, and that's great. And it's been necessary. But then that means there are businesses I really care about that have dropped off my radar. And so I want to, like, get back to where I used to be really mindful about supporting local restaurants. And I know that if I think about it, I could continue to support them without having to go in. Like, just making a point of going and getting a growler from a brewery that I, or a cider place that I like or whatever. And not having it just be like, where can I, you know, get the most calories in my body for the least amount of effort. Fastest. Yeah. And that also means looking beyond like DoorDash and Uber Eats, which are the easiest way to do it. But I have talked to so many restaurant owners who have told me how terrible it is for their business. Like, they don't make any money on those purchases. It's easy. And I get why people do it. But most restaurants now have figured out a way to make delivery possible without using one of those, services. And if they've gone the extra mile to figure that out for themselves, I know there's a reason. And so I'd like to support that.
Yeah.
And then finally, my yoga studio. So I have still been going for the last couple of months. It's masked, it's distanced. Masked yoga is interesting, but I've made it work. Mm-hmm. But there's a very good chance that's not going to be an option for very much longer. So they've also been doing a really good job with their virtual options. And I am not in the habit of using their virtual options. So I never have. But I think I'd like to try a few, because I feel like if I get used to doing virtual yoga, like in my room and set it all up and stuff, then when things shut down again, I'll be in the habit and then I can make that switch and it won't feel like such a loss, or it won't feel like such a foreign thing. And I think that's a big part of, like you called it the COVID winter, which sounds terrifying, like a dystopian novel. But the more we can start playing around with that stuff now, I think the better positioned we'll be to continue to support those businesses, even when and if things change.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was going to say, when you were talking about noticing the Facebook page, following your local businesses, restaurants, retail on social, if you do actively use social, is a great way to find out what they're doing. Because websites take a while to update. Like, having your inventory on your website is actually expensive and complicated for a small business. So you may not see that your local boutique or coffee shop has like easy online ordering on their website right away, but they may be able to post up to the minute, like, deals they're offering or ways they're staying COVID safe on their social. So I try to do that. And then if it becomes too much and too crowded in my feed, I'll unfollow. But I think it's a great way to just stay connected to what are the needs and the priorities of your local businesses. So I love that. So is there anything that you haven't tried or want to be better about this holiday season?
So I have a crazy idea, Sarah.
Okay.
And this came to me as I was falling asleep last night. I was on a Benadryl. Maybe that's why, but I've thought it through and it's sticking. So I really want to make, like, with my own hands, a lot of gifts this year. And here's the thing. I have had the same crazy idea, like, I think last year and maybe the year before that. But this year I'm like, for reals, it's 2020. Why not? Right?
Like, you can do it.
Like, we got to do it. So, well, I might really have nothing else to do depending on what ends up happening in the next couple of months. I'm going to be at home a lot. So it's not shopping per se, but you need the materials. And honestly, you know, stepping into the maker world yourself, not just as a purchaser, but as a maker of things, opens up a whole new category of small shops.
Yeah.
And small, like, purveyors to purchase from. So, like, as an example, when I was learning new embroidery stitches, I used to lean heavily on YouTube for instruction. And a lot of those YouTube personalities and instructors, they sell supplies, they have patterns, they have their own affiliate deals. And sometimes I felt like I was just taking and not really giving back. And I'd like to really take the extra steps to click through their sites, buy their patterns, buy whatever it is that they're offering, or whatever it is that's helping them make money and not just giving me free content. So that's one idea.
That's a great idea.
And then I think this year, I know you're going to get into Etsy in the second half, and I might mention a couple purchases I've made, but I probably will buy some vintage stuff on Etsy for my holiday table. this year. I was laughing that 99% of the Etsy shopping I've done has been vintage because I'm so bad at buying new stuff on Etsy. But it really is a great place. Like, if people aren't doing like dusty, crowded antique malls right now, I'm assuming it's not as much of a thing as usual.
Right.
It's a great place to go and have like a really clear picture of what you're buying and to be able to make those purchases. So, yeah, those are two ways I see myself doing that this holiday season.
I love that. And that makes me want to buy a little more vintage on Etsy as well. So I guess for me, the first thing I thought of in terms of something I could easily be better about, and this gets back to that Enneagram one, like overthinking, overanalyzing, I get really weird about using my platform, and that's giant air quotes platform, to talk about brands and businesses for all the reasons I talked about earlier. Like, I don't want it to seem weird. I don't want it to seem like, you know, if you don't buy from this fair trade, then like you're bad, blah, 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 all those hangups. But I think 90% of that is pretty silly and I can get over myself. And the thing is any sharing you do on social, no matter the size of your audience, even if you have 20 people on Instagram that are just your friends and family, when you tag a small business or a musician or an artist or, you know, like any kind of a maker or independent business owner, that's huge for them. They can reshare that in their stories.
Yeah.
They can use that in their marketing if they need to. And it makes them feel good. It's like truly, most of these people are struggling right now, not raking in, you know, big bucks during COVID winter. So I can be better about using my quote unquote influence, which is really just like, I'm just a mom buying stuff on Etsy or from my local shop or a coffee shop. And I can be much better about just celebrating those small businesses with a quick little Instagram story and tagging them. I know how to do that. I have the platform, and the reasons I don't are really dumb. So that was just like the first thing that came to me as something I can very quickly be good at. And if you're not someone who posts a lot on social, maybe that's not the way that you help. But for me, that would be easy.
Let me dig into that Enneagramness just for a second again. So I want to make sure I understand this reasoning. So is your hang up that it doesn't seem fair because then you wouldn't also be doing it for everybody else? I'm just trying to understand the hang up.
I think there's a few. One is that I like my social posts to be well done and well curated. And sometimes I stop short because it can't be like the perfect photo or the perfect tag or the perfect clever caption. So sometimes I think, oh, I'll do this later when I have more time to make it really well done. That's the part of the one that's the perfectionist or the,
right,
you know, the part that wants to do things the quote unquote right way. That would be one way. Another thing would be maybe on a whim, I post about some new brand I discovered and lo and behold, they're not actually like as socially responsible as I thought they were. Or there could be a better brand that I haven't heard of. Or here's another one. Everyone already knows this already, Sarah. Like, you're just discovering that you can support independent artists on Minted. Like, how cute. We all know that already. So there's a million hangups.
Got it. Okay.
But the truth is, if you tag a small business or an artist on social, they will appreciate it. And that's an easy thing. One final practical tip that I think I can implement this holiday season is to think about the museums and the zoos and the tourist attractions in your area. And we both live in touristy areas, Megan. Those places are going to be really hurting for a while. Many of them are nonprofits. Many of them require crowds and travel, two of the things that are going to be last to come back. But often they have great gift shops, like art museum gift shops and zoo gift shops are often really, like, they have really nice stuff. So checking into your local museums and zoos and play places and to see if they are selling their retail stuff. They might even have sales or deals. They might have curbside pickup. So we were downtown last night and I noticed that the art museum gift shop had its doors open and I was like, oh, that stuff looks so pretty. What is it? And it was the art museum gift shop. So I think it would be pretty easy for me to call the zoo, call the art museum, call the children's museum and just see what their shopping is this holiday season. And since those places are really going to be hurting for regular customers, I think that could be both local, but also for the particularly hurting organizations this winter.
That's a really good idea. I love that. And while you're at it, you can see what virtual options they may have or offerings they may be, you know, I know a lot of places that aren't able to have any in-person business or any in-person anything right now, have gotten like museums and zoos and cultural organizations and arts organizations are getting really creative with the way that they do stuff online. And often that's donation based or free, but it's something you might be able to support in some way. And I like that idea.
Well, let's take a break. And then when we come back, we'll just talk through some specific purchases I've made and we've made recently that maybe will get all of you listeners' creative wheels turning for this shopping season. Megan, this might not be what moms of little kids want to hear, but I feel like I'm going through a second round of food pickiness with my kids now that they're older. And in the winter, it feels like they eat even fewer fruits and veggies because their go-to favorites aren't in season. This winter, I'm so glad we have our sponsor, Hiya, to fill in some of those gaps and, you know, alleviate a little of my mom guilt. Hiya Kids vitamins supply the nutrients a lot of kids are missing from their diet these days, and they contain zero sugar, and they're also non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free.
Yeah, all that, and they taste great, too. These are not the gummy, sugary kids vitamins you and I remember from back in the day, Sarah. The two dads who created Hiya really flipped the script on that outdated model to fit more with what modern kids need and to make sure to skip all the junk parents don't feel great about. Hiya vitamins are made from a blend of 12 farm-fresh fruits and vegetables, and then they're supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals that are known to help support a healthy immune system, energy levels, brain function, mood, teeth, bones, and more.
Hiya vitamins are made right here in the USA, and they come shipped to your door on a pediatrician-recommended schedule. And we're going to help you get 50% off your first order, half off. To claim this deal, go to HiyaHealth.com/MomHour or enter the code MomHour and you'll see that full discount applied at checkout. That's Hiya Health, HiyaHealth.com/MomHour to save 50% on your first order of kids vitamins.
Sarah, in my area, temperatures are dropping and COVID rates are climbing. Plus the holidays are coming. It's all a recipe for hashtag kitchen life, and I am getting ready.
Oh, yeah. I feel that. I am heading in that direction, too.
So one of the things I've noticed about my kitchen puttering is that I like to have some kind of little snack out that I can graze on when I cook or bake or clean. It made me think of our sponsor, Magic Spoon Cereal. You know, these days, I don't sit down and polish off a bowl of cereal as much as I used to, but I do love to have a little bowl of something tasty sitting out that I can kind of pick at as I putter.
I love this idea. It's way better for you than, you know, pilfering the baking supplies, Megan. Magic Spoon is a line of cereals based on the flavors we grew up with, but with way less of the stuff we don't want to put in our bodies anymore. Magic Spoon comes in flavors like cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry, and they all have zero sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. They taste amazingly close to the originals we all get nostalgic for, and they're keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free.
The kids love Magic Spoon too, so I'm thinking I better have a few varieties on hand. If you want to give Magic Spoon a try next time you want a bowl of cereal or just want a sweet snack, go to magicspoon.com/mom to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code MOM at checkout to get free shipping. Again, that's magicspoon.com/mom and use the promo code MOM at checkout to get free shipping.
Okay, so this is going to be fun. We're going to talk through some actual purchases. Obviously, any links and photos we'll put in the show notes. And so go look there so you can follow along. Megan, you have some vintage purchases to talk about. Those are a little harder to link to because they're one of a kind, but I am so interested and curious in this. So maybe just at a high level, do you want to talk about some of the vintage purchases you've made recently?
Yeah. Well, what I love about shopping for vintage is that sometimes there's like a thing in my head that I know that I want and I cannot find it anywhere. And often I actually have figured out that that's because I saw it like in from my past or like on an episode of Mad Men or something. So I know it's out there, but it truly does not exist in any like in any current line of anything. Right. Mm-hmm. So examples of that would be like I love vintage glassware. I love the patterns on it. I love vintage tablecloths and like tea towels and other linens like that. And often you can find something similar in today's patterns, but they're just not, the colors aren't quite the same or whatever. So I've had really good luck. Glasses can be hard to find. They do break. Families are hard on them. So those are hard to find like going back any earlier than like the 50s, but you can sometimes on Etsy. And so I will go on to Etsy. And just in the last year, I bought a really cool vintage 1940s tea towel, which is actually on my bedside table. It's like bright green, blue, red, and yellow stripes on white, which looks really cool next to my bed. I got a, I think it was called like Summer's Bounty tablecloth. And it's all like strawberries and red flowers. And you know, it's got like the strawberry in the middle. And then like the clusters of strawberries and leaves all around the outside. I think that was 40s or 50s. I got like a set of Anchor Hocking blue, like cobalt blue bowls, which aren't that old. They probably are early 80s, but they totally matched these plates I already had with like these blue splotches on them. And I really needed bowls. And then I got a set of jelly jar glasses with the coral flowers and like the green. I actually probably can find a picture of that one and put it in because I just love them so much. But again, these are things where like you can't go on exactly, and I'm sure it's like this with the other kinds of purchases too, but you can't go on thinking, I want exactly this thing, because you might find like a glass pattern that you really love, but you can only find four glasses.
Right.
And so then you have to decide, am I cool with mixing and matching? Do I really want eight glasses? Can I find one that looks pretty similar and then just have them sort of coordinate but not match? Like, you kind of have to make a call. And sometimes, you know, some of the flowers are rubbed off, and is that okay? And they might say, don't put them in the dishwasher. And you have to be okay with, like, if you do put them in the dishwasher, they will probably fade faster. Mm-hmm. And you have to be okay with that or not. So it is a little bit more complicated, but I just find it really fun. And Etsy makes it pretty easy. Like, you can, there's a vintage section.
Yep.
But you can also just go in the search for anything and put in like 40s linens and see what comes up. And sometimes the seller isn't 100% sure what era it's from. So they'll say 40s or 50s, or they'll kind of guess at the brand. And that's another good way to do it. If you know some manufacturers from whatever era you're looking at, you can figure out some brand names. Like if you know you like Pyrex, you can put vintage Pyrex and see what comes up. And so it's more of an adventure. Like it's not a direct route to anything. It's more like kind of like antiquing in real life.
Yeah.
Only you're sitting on your bed and you're just looking at photos and kind of making that decision that way. And I've never tried to haggle. I don't know if that's a thing. Like, I don't look at it quite the same way as I would antique shop in person. It's more like I have a specific thing that I want and I haven't found it in any stores, or I'm not going to stores, so I'm going to try to find it on Etsy. And a lot of people do that, like that they have shops, and for a lot of people, it's a real source of revenue. So mm-hmm. It does feel good, like supporting a small business.
Yeah, I love that. And I was going to say that search terms on Etsy, it take a little practice, but like what you were saying, if you're not quite sure what you're looking for and you type in 1940s linens, when the search results pop up, you'll probably see the sellers using specific keywords that you can then use those to search for your next thing. And that happens a lot. Like I'm not sure how to describe the thing I'm looking for, but once I try once and I find something, I'm like, oh, that's what it's called. Maybe I don't even know exactly what it's called. Actually, my first item kind of fell into that category. So yeah, that's great. And Etsy is a very pleasant website to navigate.
It is. And don't you find, Sarah, too, that I know this is true in vintage, but I'm sure it's also true not in vintage with makers and stuff, is once you find a seller who has something you like, it's very likely they're going to have a lot of stuff you like. So mm-hmm. sometimes you can just like, you know, like you can cut down the time shopping just by going to their store and seeing and seeing what else they have to offer.
Absolutely. So do you want to see what I've bought?
I do.
Okay. So this first item, doesn't that sound like I'm on the Price is Right or something? Or an auction. So this first item is called a handcrafted leather valet tray, or a valet tray. Which would you say?
I think I would say valet, because in Downton Abbey, someone who kept all your stuff for you would be your valet. And that would be what this is, right?
I think so. Yeah, it's spelled the same as the people who park your car. But a valet tray is basically a dude-friendly place to drop your stuff. And that is exactly what I needed when I was shopping for Brian's birthday. He's very neat. He's very orderly with his personal items. And so he'll always have a little stack of like wallet, coins, keys. And it's always like he's very tidy. That's all I can say about that, especially with small personal effects. But the way our bedroom is set up here, I think before he had a little dish or something in his closet, but our closets are different here. And he puts his stuff on top of his dresser and there's nothing else on there, which is like kind of how he likes it. There's no stacks of clothes or whatever like on mine. But I thought, well, he could use a little dish or a tray or something that looks nice just to put his wallet and his coins and his whatever else. And so that was an example of, I searched, but I didn't know it was called a valet tray or a valet tray. So I forget what search terms I put in, but pretty soon I realized, oh, this is what it's called. And then I searched for that. And the one that I found actually got him two, one for his nightstand and one for his dresser. And it's just from a small leather maker. The Etsy shop is called The Path Less Traveled. And they're very simple. You can see the photo, but really nice quality. And they kind of they come up and snap in the corners. So it sort of takes a piece of leather and turns it into kind of a square manly tray, if you will.
I love this, by the way. And it reminds me that, you know, those little things that look like little people sort of that sit next to your bed and a man would hang like his suit jacket on it. And then you would put your like his change or whatever in the little tray. Those are, I believe, also called valets.
Oh, OK. Yeah. Like a little
like a little valet. Man there to hold your stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is so
I think
cute.
This could make a great gift and was very affordable. That I just got the two sizes. And yeah. So again, that'll be linked up. But it was called a handcrafted leather valet tray by The Path Less Traveled. Okay, so you ready for my next one? It is a hanging planter basket. Do you feel like hanging plants a la 70s and 80s are back everywhere you look, Megan?
They are. Unfortunately, I learned the hard way that my house does not have like any pre-drilled in hanging hooks in the ceiling, like anywhere in my house. And you know, I'm not going to hang any of those myself. Come on. So I'm very intrigued by this.
Okay. Well, we have also learned a little bit about hanging plants. It is trickier because they're heavy. When there's like dirt and water in there, they're heavier than you think. This is a hanging planter basket. And I put a picture in there, but Megan, if you click the link and if listeners click the link, you can see it up close. It's really like a woven rope basket of a really natural fiber that's really pretty. And this Etsy seller is called Little Love Home. And she actually makes a lot of planters that don't hang. So you wouldn't have to get a hanging one. I bought this for my sister for her birthday, and then I actually bought one for myself, and it has a really pretty wooden loop or wooden ring at the top that you can use for the hanging. And in the picture, it's actually shown hanging from like the end of like a storage hanging bar, like at the, I don't know what that would be, like open shelving type of situation. So yeah, and it's really pretty and they have different sizes, and I just thought that could make a really nice gift. I have mine hanging in my laundry room. I can maybe share a picture of my actual one. And I actually put a fake plant in it because I was like, this small space is not going to get quite enough light. And I had a really pretty little fake plant. So I just popped it in there. So I could swap it out for real later on. But yeah, so that is a little hanging planter basket. And they also have non-hanging ones.
Is yours then hanging, like in the picture, it's showing it kind of like hanging on a rod.
Yeah.
Is that like, what is yours hanging on?
Mine is a hook that Brian put in the ceiling. But it was easier because I chose the fake plant. It's lighter. Allegra got some macrame plant hangers for her bedroom. And we did have to have a handyman do the hooks because the first time Brian tried, it didn't work. And he's pretty handy. But the hooks weren't sturdy enough because when you add dirt and water, they have to be able to support a fair amount of weight. It's not super hard to screw in a little tiny hook. We've done it for other things before. But I think if you're getting into where it needs to support quite a bit of weight, then you want to make sure it's going into the right place and that it's a sturdy enough hook and it has reinforcements and stuff. So you could have a handyman do it. Brian did the one for me in the laundry room. So I'll put a picture up. Yeah. Okay. This next one I just want everyone to buy because I love this tradition and I love this product and I have no relationship to the seller. And in fact, she's not even on social because I have tried to tag her before. But this is another product I didn't know what search terms to use. But when I was a kid, we had a mug with a little ceramic bunny in the bottom. And it was a surprise. Like you could pour cocoa or milk. And as you drank it, when you got to the bottom, there was like a little friend down there, like an actual 3D, you know, it's not like a picture or a painting of a bunny, but an actual clay bunny sitting in the bottom of your mug. Well, apparently it's called a surprise mug. And I found a seller on Etsy who makes these. So she hand makes the ceramic mugs and some of them are shaped like coffee mugs, some like tea mugs. So even the individual mugs are very individualized and she hand paints them. And in the bottom of each mug is a little ceramic animal and they are the most adorable. I gave them to my nieces who are only 1 and 3. And of course they only use them like while supervised, but like it basically could be like a special mug for any kid. It could be very personalized because she probably will do custom. I'm sure she would, but I've seen every animal. There's turtles and mice and owls. Allegra has an owl. Violet has a kitty and Reed has a penguin. And they are the cutest. So I will continue to buy these for gifts for kids in my life.
I am looking at her shop right now. These are so dang cute. And I was just thinking, I love the idea this year of giving a lot of gifts that are like all the kids get one of the same thing.
Yes.
Like we were talking about blankets last week or the week before. And
yeah.
And I was just thinking, we always do something on New Year's or Christmas Eve. Like we always open at least one gift on Christmas Eve and then have a snack and play a game or something. And wouldn't it be fun to give each of the kids one of these and then like but give them to them with like cocoa in it so they didn't know and then make some popcorn or something.
Surprise. Yeah,
an actual surprise. Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah, and they're just the cutest. The one I will link to has a little Labrador puppy, but you can just browse through them. And I love that the mugs themselves are also, she hand makes them. So some are shaped very much like a tea mug and others like a coffee mug. Some are bigger than others. And her name is Marie-Claude Roche, and she's French-Canadian. But I have ordered from her two or three times now, and it's been totally worth it. So I really think she's a quite small seller. Like, she's not on social. I just found her because I needed to find what is the thing called when there's an animal sitting at the bottom of your cocoa mug?
And then I better hurry up and buy the ones I want before this episode goes live.
Seriously, because I think it's just her. So we'll clean her out. She is. And if it's not her, just search surprise mug, ceramic animal in your coffee mug type of thing. And okay. I'm sure something will come up. So, all right. So this next one I got a while ago for Violet's room, but I think could make a great gift. And it is a canopy from a Etsy shop called Tucson Teepee. So I think they make, you know how you see a lot of like make-believe tents and teepees for play nowadays. And so this is an Etsy shop version, but we have it hung over Violet's bed. In the picture, you show it hanging from the ceiling and almost being used like a cozy fort or cozy reading nook. Mm. But for Violet, it's over the head of her bed and she loves it. It just makes her bed special. She'll go in there and kind of draw the drapes around her, draw the canopy around her and like create a little hiding place when she's mad or needs time away. So, and it's held up really well. I want to say we've had it for a year and a half or 2 years and she kind of pulls on the little tassels and she's, you know, she's a kid and it's held up really, really well. So it's called a pom-pom play canopy. Yeah.
What kid doesn't want to basically go into their bed and then turn it into a fort or a fortress or, you know, like a tent, like it just checks off so many little kid boxes.
Yes.
I kind of want one.
Yes. And if you combine it with some twinkle lights, we had those in her old room. We haven't set them up in this room. It just is magical. And they come in cute colors. And on their Etsy shop, you can see the different design ideas. Like they have them in some cases behind a crib, not where the baby could pull on it or reach it, but almost like just creating like a tableau look behind a baby's crib or different things you can do with them. So yeah, that was a good purchase. So I have just a couple from Minted. But Minted is another great source for independent artists who list their stuff on the Minted marketplace. If you're an artist listening, I would be curious, like, do you know much about how that works, Megan, or how much if the artists are well compensated? I'm confessing here that I don't know how the model works.
I don't know, but I guess the impression I got is that they are pretty well compensated because it's pretty, I think it's pretty competitive.
Like,
I think you are invited or whatever, or they have some way of curating that. So,
yeah.
But I would love to hear if it is as good as it sounds. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And it's well curated, beautifully curated collection. So I think what I'll do is just generally talk about their fabric and textiles, and I'll just lump these two together. But I have actually purchased this Weekender tote bag, which is a fabric tote bag, and you can personalize it. And it's very luxurious feeling. It's just really well made. And the artisan part has mostly to do with the fabric. So these are like painted fabrics, really beautiful. And then I've also bought cloth napkins, which they have in really pretty sets where all the napkins are slightly different, but they kind of go together. And then, oh my gosh, they have cocktail napkins for the holidays now. And I don't think they had those last time I shopped and I need them. The cocktail napkins are so cute. They're just like a square of fabric each and they're like painted and adorable. So all of the fabric gifts on Minted I have personally purchased have been great quality.
Okay, I love these prints. And I love how many there are.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you, Sarah, and this is one thing that I've had a really hard time because I have tried to buy napkins online. I actually tried to buy some on Etsy, and then the girl texted me like a week after I ordered and said she was so behind she was going to cancel my order because she couldn't keep up with it. And then I was like, oh, man. It truly was. I was like, oh, man. But I really love, I love dining room linens and dining linens. And these like rosy glow would be so perfect with my aesthetic, that collection. Mm-hmm. But are they soft and like, do they feel good and are they absorbent? That's one thing. I never feel like I get the texture right.
Well, okay. So I have personally felt the tote bag, the Weekender tote bag. And I was so impressed with the quality. I've given that as a gift twice, but it came to me first and then I shipped it. So I felt it. The napkins I bought as a gift for my sister, and I believe I had them sent straight to her when they got their new house. So I have not personally felt the napkins, but I just feel like minted quality stuff is so good.
Well, and sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes it's enough that they just look pretty sitting on your table. But like sometimes they're truly just, they feel like plasticky or something on the outside, right, and they don't feel like something you'd want to wipe your mouth with. So I just am always curious. We'll have to ask your sister.
I cannot.
I'll ask her privately. So if she hates them, she can tell me honestly.
I hate those napkins.
But don't tell Sarah.
No. Okay. So my last minted thing is an art print, which may be more what people think of minted. I guess I think of holiday cards and stationery, and then I think of art. And I wouldn't have thought of the fabric. But I own one of these prints that you're looking at, Megan, that listeners can look at in our show notes. And I have gifted the other one, and they're both by an artist named Kate Ahn, A-H-N. And I've looked her up on Instagram, and that's another thing that's nice about Minted. You can find them on Minted, but then you could go follow or purchase from them directly or see what else they do out in the art world. Okay, maybe you can describe these, Megan. We're both looking at them in our show outline, but I'm too close to it. I've owned one for a couple of years, and I've gifted one. You're seeing them for the first time, so maybe you can describe them.
Well, I love them. So they look like charcoal or something. It's hard for me to tell in the photo, but they have that sort of sensibility about them. And it's a woman in profile holding a small child, a baby. The one on the left is a little baby, mm-hmm. like a month old baby. And then the one on the right is a toddler. The one on the right looks just like you.
I know, that's the one I have. I love it.
Yeah. And so she's in profile just holding a baby the way one does. And the baby's kind of slumped. It looks like it could be you or anybody, though. That's kind of the cool thing. Like, I bet this is the sort of thing where almost anyone could go through and find someone in the collection that kind of looks a little like them.
Yeah.
And they're just really pretty. And I can't think of what it's called when the edges are kind of blurred out like that. It's like gradient almost, but all gray.
And I want to say that it's actually watercolor, but just in grayscale. So just using blacks and grays. But it has that. It's just abstract enough. It's not so abstract that people say, what is that? Like the Rorschach, like, what do you see in this image? It's, to me, it's explicit enough or concrete enough to see that it's mother and child and mother and baby, but with a very soft, abstract feel that, like you said, could be anybody. And so I have the one where it looks like she's holding a older toddler and her hair's up in a high bun. And then I got my sister, the one with the little baby. And I don't know. I just feel like every mom would want to buy one of these for themselves.
Yeah.
It's not even a gift at this point.
It.
Yeah. So
just get it for you. Gift it to yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hopefully that gets some creative wheels turning, of things maybe that people could have their eye on either online, small businesses or local small businesses. And we would also just love to hear if you have small businesses or Etsy shops or minted artists that you love and are passionate about, like leave a comment on the show notes or, you know, on the Instagram post for this episode. We would love to just spread knowledge and love of other independent creators, because I think we all want to support them this holiday season.
We do. And definitely check back with us later this week, because we will be back with another More Than Mom episode on Sunday. And we'll talk to you then.